Can you feel it? That change of season bringing a new level of concern when it comes to blackouts and storms and bad weather. And your solution today is not only one of the most durable waterproof products I have ever tested, but it'll power all sorts of tech from tablets to iPhones to lights. And this little portable generator will also light the way. Not only is this personal generator waterproof, it's solar powered, portable. You get two outputs so you can power all sorts of devices from computers to tablets, the new iPhone 8 and Android, whatever it is. This is a must-have backup emergency kit for hurricane season. Certified for heavy water submersion, extremely durable, and extremely well rated. This item, which is usually 80, I found for 37. It's not a paid product. On our website, you'll find all the links, all the saving insight, and if there's any other deal that you're looking for, just hit me up. Back to you.
Get Mike Snyder Sports mornings, 15 and 45 past. Morning, Mike.
Good morning, Bill. A new week, a new quarterback for the Browns. Well, actually, it's a familiar face. DeShone Kizer gets his job back this week, and we'll start a quarterback Sunday when the Tennessee Titans come to town. How did he react to being demoted last week? Here's what he said.
It definitely sparked my competitive juices. It definitely motivated me throughout the week to make sure that I'm doing extra. I think the most important thing that I got to see from my perspective last week is what my process is and what our process is as a unit, and how in this league you got to talk less and do more.
Well, we'll see how it all plays out Sunday. The Browns and the Titans, really an opportunity when you look at it. Tennessee coming off of a Monday night game and the Browns at home. It will be Cody Kessler as Kizer's backup as Kevin Hogan has bruised ribs, and he's now the number three quarterback, and they're going to hold him out this week. The NFL week actually starts tonight. Pretty good game. Kansas City is at Oakland. Cavaliers will practice today, then travel to Milwaukee where they will meet the Bucks tomorrow night. Milwaukee spoiled Boston's home opener with a 108-100 win last night. Giannis Antetokounmpo with 37 points. This kid is coming into his own as he led Milwaukee. Kyrie Irving just 17 points for Boston on 7 of 25 shooting. Gordon Hayward, who suffered that gruesome broken leg against the Cavs on Tuesday, addressed the Celtics crowd via video in a hospital gown from his bed before undergoing surgery. The surgery was performed last night. His agent says while he's expected to make a full recovery, it is unlikely he'll be able to play again this season. Well, the season continues for the New York Yankees, and they're a game away from going to the World Series. Masahiro Tanaka, 7 dominant innings, and the Yankees go on and get a 5-0 win over Dallas Keuchel and the Houston Astros. Game 6 of that series now in Houston tomorrow. It'll be Justin Verlander trying to keep the Astros alive as the Yankees go up 3-2. In the National League, the Cubs are still alive. They got a 3-2 win over the Dodgers last night. L.A. still up 3-1 with Game 5 tonight in Chicago. Home of the Indians and the Cavaliers, Mike Snyder, News Radio, WTAM 1100.
Deadline day, I guess, to bid on this new big Amazon headquarters. Joe Roman heads up the Greater Cleveland Partnership. He'll join me at 7:20 this morning on the bid. Channel 3's Will Uick downtown on this. It's a big day for a lot of jobs, Will.
Yeah, it's a deadline day for bids. Any city that's submitting to host Amazon as their city for the second headquarters, that's got to be in today. We know that Cleveland's making their pitch. A lot of cities making their pitch, and really not hard to see why, Bill. 50,000 new jobs, many of them six figures, a long-term boost to the local economy. The list really goes on. So stiff competition for Cleveland going up against all these other cities to try to get Amazon to come down here.
Well, we've got some Amazon here now, distribution jobs. This particular move, though, this would be all corporate stuff?
Yeah, that probably helps us out. You know, we have the warehouse and another warehouse coming over in Euclid. There's a fulfillment center going up at the Randall Park mall site. So what they're looking for is a place that has really strong airports. They're going to need to get back to Seattle where their main headquarters is, a large number of annual college grads, strong job growth, access to mass transit, obviously high quality of life. So that's what they're looking for. Cleveland, we're making our pitch. Mayor Frank Jackson, Armand Budish issuing a statement that they're putting an aggressive package together. Not sure what the details are on that package for the bid, but we know we're in on it. Obviously, Columbus, Cincinnati, Youngstown, they're all in on it. Ohio senators, representatives getting involved. They came together to pitch the Amazon CEO on the state of Ohio as a whole, not really singling out a city, but saying that the state's an ideal location for Amazon. a lot of people getting in on this, Bill, and it's going to be interesting to see Amazon's decision, not expected, though, until next year. But today, deadline day for those bids to get in.
Channel 3's Will Ewick on the story this morning. Thanks, Will.
Thanks, Bill.
Again, at 7:20, Joe Roman, one of the point guys on this, heads up the Greater Cleveland Partnership. He'll join me to talk about the bid. To Washington we go. Still controversy over the phone call.
He said, well, I guess you knew he something to the fact that he knew what he was getting into when he signed up. But I guess it hurts anyway. You know, just matter-of-factly that this is what happens. Anyone who is signing up for military duty is signing up to die. She was in tears, and she said he didn't even remember his name.
Didn't say what that congresswoman said. Didn't say it at all. She knows it, and she now is not saying it. Had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife, who is sounded like a lovely woman, did not say what the congresswoman said, and most people aren't too surprised to hear that.
What is the proof, Mr. President?
Let her make her statement again, and then you'll find out.
Let's go to Washington. Joe Gomez sorts through this morning. Awkward. You've got, obviously, people in shock. They've lost a loved one, and the President of the United States being called for what he said. Joe, I guess there's no recording of this?
No, that's what, according to the White House spokesperson, Sarah Huckabee Sanders, she said the president was not talking about a recording when he said that he had proof that conversation didn't happen, but was referring to officials who were in the room with him during the call, and that was, I guess, his chief of staff, John Kelly. But as we heard there, the president is maintaining that he had a very nice conversation with the woman, with the wife, who sounded like a lovely woman. But in all seriousness, it was because it's a Gold Star family, and obviously it brings kind of a new level of gravity to this. And I think a lot of people are just kind of concerned the president may be overstepping his bounds here. And already we're seeing more of these families kind of speak out. For instance, there was this the father of a sergeant who said that he was promised $25,000 by President Trump, what he called him, several months ago, and never got that check until recently when the story came out.
Protocol in the past, I have read presidents normally will draft a letter and send to the family. At times there are phone calls. I mean, there's no good way to handle this. The people are in shock. They're going to pick up the body of a loved one. The call comes in, it's the President of the United States, and then you try and just figure out how he's saying what he's saying, and obviously he's awkward at times anyway, so it I guess it could go both ways, depending on what your feelings were.
Well, yeah, I mean, I'm sure people are kind of emotionally charged at that point, and, you know, hard to interpret what the president's saying, but this Congresswoman Frederica Wilson of Miami, you know, when asked, was she politicizing the call, she said that, well, she's a politician. And she said that when I pick up a puppy, I'm politicizing it.
Right.
So I guess there's her answer.
Yeah. Saw that, too. All right. Joe Gomez sorting through all of it this morning in D.C. Joe, thanks.
Thanks.
Kind of on that point, when you hear this story and, you know, people have emotional feelings on both sides. Saw some of this on Facebook yesterday, back and forth. There's an interesting poll this morning from Politico. 49% of voters believe that major news organizations fabricate stories about President Trump and his administration. 46%, almost half the people in the country, think major news organizations fabricate stuff. And this is an example of one of those stories. Poll found that 37% of voters think the media doesn't fabricate stories about the president. 17%, not sure. There's always that undecided. And this is kind of high, 17. I just don't know. Overwhelming majority of Republicans, no surprise, 76% believes the media makes up news about Trump. At 65% of Democrats say, no, this stuff's all true. Of the voters who strongly approved the president's job performance, 85% believe the media makes up fake news about Trump. Yet the poll found only 28% of voters believe the government should yank the broadcast licenses of news organizations, with the majority, 51%, saying it should not be done. Although major news organizations really don't have broadcast licenses. Also, an interesting story. We've told the Russian news agency they got to register. I guess it's like a foreign concern. Now Russia says, well, if you're going to do that, CNN has to do the same over here. So Rush was off yesterday, back today, news at noon. Then Limbaugh's taking all this, 1205 WTAM 1100.
Hey, good morning.
Good to talk to you. No surprise, I guess, it's Reid versus Jackson after the primary a few weeks back?
Yeah, both campaigns had done some polls that had Zach ahead of Jeff Johnson, who was his colleague on council, who was second most of the way through and had the backing of that SEIU union. But Zach, who had stayed really on a message about safety first, that and he showed the outrage that people wanted to see and hear about some of the violence, particularly on the city's east side, and that propelled him through the primary.
They'll square off. I think he wanted a couple of debates. Mayor said, no, we're just going to do one. City club setting, if you will. Really, I guess, look, Jackson's been the political machine in this town for many, many terms. And Reed needs to attack him somehow and get some attention, I would think.
Yeah, a couple of things going on. First of all, the debate will be a little different this year. They're going to be much more of a panel of journalists asking questions versus the long opening and closing statements in the back and forth. Everybody gets a chance to respond with two. You can have a lot more dynamic debate. I think we're going to see that. Zach has been trying to stay on a message of safety first. I hate using his quote there, but that is what he's defined himself as. Jackson has been really trying to say, I've done a lot. I've kept the city going. And Zach has no accomplishments. So I think you're going to see that dynamic play. The mayor's going to push it on Zach to say, well, what have you done? And I think Zach's going to push back and say, you've had your chance. We're still faced with these number of problems, and it's time for a change.
Interesting that the mayor, at least in some radio spots, went after Zach and some of the personal issues he's had that became public, shall we? I mean, obviously, when it comes to the driving.
DUIs.
Yes, the
yeah.
DUIs, which I thought was interesting. I would think politically you normally don't play that card unless you're worried a bit.
Well, that is definitely a sign that they've worried a bit. But I also think it's worth noting that the mayor has since pulled those ads and flyers. I think there was some I know there was dissension within the campaign of whether or not to go there. The mayor has always established himself as a guy that is forgiving, that believes in second chances. He's hired people in his administration that went to prison for corruption. He has always tried to say, people in this city should not be defined by a couple of mistakes they made. And I think that's why the mayor has pulled that back. But I think there's another sign, too, that there's some concern. I wrote a piece last week about former Mayor Michael White and others, advisors to the mayor that have gotten together and talked about maybe creating a special interest group, those super PACs where they could run money, run ads, raise money on behalf of the mayor. That tells me they don't want to leave things to chance. I think the mayor and Zach are doing maybe head-to-head on the city's east side, and the mayor will have a little more support right now on the west side. So he should be the guy who wins, but boy, is he nervous.
City club debate. We'll see what plays out today. Mark will be posting a story with some of his take. Follow him on Twitter, and of course, check him out at cleveland.com and the Plain Dealer, Mark Namek. Mark, thanks.
Thank you.
This is it. This is it. This is life. The one you get. So go and have a ball.
Big sitcom through the 70s. One day at a time. You, of course, know her story with the family, the mamas and the papas, and Phillips, American Graffiti. Now she travels the country talking about addiction, something she battles every day. Mackenzie Phillips.
And now, 5 Good Minutes.
Get a chance to catch up with her. I thank you for your time, first of all. Look, addiction, the opioid crisis, even President Trump has made next week a national week to challenge this thing. It's touching every, not just zip code, it seems like in many ways, Mackenzie, every family.
Yes, I mean, and you sound shocked, but, it's been a long time coming, and there have been a lot of factors that have contributed to this epidemic. And I wish we had been able to prevent it, but now that it's here, we're beholden to do something about it.
Hopeful Healing, Essays, Managing Recovery, and Surviving Addiction, one of your latest works. A big part of this, as you have written and talked about, is just being open about it. We can't be hiding about this problem anymore?
Well, I think that silence equals death. Silence equals more families suffering this horrible pain of losing a loved one an overdose. And so I believe that it's important that we have a national discussion, that we open up we have to reduce the shame. We have to say, hey, let that go and let's figure out what we're going to do about this instead of trying to keep up appearances that everyone's okay, because everyone's not okay.
Ohio, we've had some sad headlines when it comes to opiate and heroin overdoses, but we're not alone. I mean, you know, this state, like so many others, seem to be almost overrun with this, Mackenzie.
Yeah, and, you know, your state has been particularly hard hit for whatever reason. It is heartbreaking and devastating. And, you know, I mean, like I said, you know, people need to understand that it's okay to talk about this. It's okay to be in recovery. It's okay to say, yeah, we had this issue in our family. You know, people continue, a lot of people anyway, continue to view addiction as some sort of moral failing, some sort of moral issue, where if we were really to get curious about it and do our own homework, we would see that it is an illness, that it is something that is nothing to be ashamed of, you know, and I think that's really important message to get out there.
Mackenzie Phillips, kind with her time. She'll be in town speaking at the La Cottaway Annual Recognition Dinner. I've got some ticket info. I'll get to that in just a minute. But while I have you, and you talk about recovery, and work, treatment, as you talk about it, is not a one size fits all. I mean, you're doing some amazing things on awareness and education, but that treatment program is so important for every individual, right?
Yes, absolutely. And treatment works. You know, I see the practical representation of treatment working every day when I walk into Breathe Life Healing Center in West Hollywood, where I work. You know, it's really, I mean, imagine that you are a human being who is caught in the throes of this horrible addiction. And you just decide, well, I'm just going to stop. That is just almost an impossibility, to just make a decision to not do it anymore without some sort of support, without some sort of therapeutic intervention, without someone offering you a different way of living. And that's where treatment comes in. And it's really valuable and it's really important.
Mackenzie, not just a quote-unquote celebrity talking about this as a problem. As she mentioned with counseling, she is actively involved in helping people. And I wanted to ask you, my producer Scooter reminded me of this. There was an episode, Beverly Hills 90210. You actually played an intervention counselor. Were you already interested at the time in that kind of work?
I have been interested in that kind of work since I was a little kid. I mean, I remember being just a small child and wondering what drives behavior, what makes people do the things they do. As I sat there and looked around me at the adults in my life behaving more immaturely than I did at the age of 7, and I was always fascinated with behavior. And I went to my mom when I was a little girl and I said, you know, Mommy, I want to be, what it was called at that point, I suppose, I wanted to be an abnormal psychologist, because I was so fascinated by what makes people do the things they do. And then, you know, the acting train pulled into town, and I rode that train in the direction it was going for many, many years and was very successful at that. And then there came a time in my life where I realized that I wouldn't be alive as long as I already have been, unless I'm some sort of magical anomaly, which I don't think I am. And I took stock, and I thought, what am I really passionate about? And I ended up going back to school and so that I could, you know, because experientially, I am an expert. But I needed the education to back it up so that I could do it as a career. And that's what I've been doing since, you know, for the last 5 years or so. And, you know, and I have the opportunity to do a lot of things, other things as well. But that is my main purpose right now, is to work in a clinical behavioral health setting.
Well, and we thank you, and so many families thank you for the spotlight you're putting on this, and you'll be sharing, I'm sure, more that night. Mackenzie Phillips, thank you for your time. All the best.
My pleasure. Thank you so much.
Some irony. One day at a time. Mackenzie Phillips, she'll be in town next Thursday evening. TheLaCottaway.org is where you can get some ticket information for the night to be there to help benefit this La Cottaway Pearls of Wisdom Annual Recognition Dinner held each year. to honor those affected by drug, alcohol, gambling addiction, those that are helping in the community with a service award. Ticket information, The Licata Way. The Licata, L-A-C-A-D-A, thelicataway.org. More of my interview with Mackenzie Phillips up on a podcast we'll post at the podcast page. Do a search on the iHeart app, plus there'll be a link up there for thelicataway.org. One day at a time. Topic in this city and many around the country today is today marks a deadline of bids for Amazon's second headquarters, HQ2, set to employ up to 50,000 people. Cities, states have been swooning over the opportunity and the possibility when it comes to Amazon coming to their town. Joe Roman heads up the Greater Cleveland Partnership in studio with us this morning as we visit every month or so about our city and topics. And let's get to this, but let me set this up for you first. We're already fortunate with some Amazon distribution.
Yes.
And
yes.
We look forward to adding more there.
3,000 jobs coming in the east side.
As you and I talked, though, a month ago, Cleveland, one of the cities in the mix. What can you tell me?
Well, there'll be an announcement later today by our elected officials. But the good news is that this city's competing. You know, there isn't anything this city can't go after now. And what's best about that is we actually have the confidence to do that. That's what the game-changer RNC, I think, created for us. I mean, there have been public-private partnerships in this town for many, many years. We probably wrote the book on it because we have to. That's the way we have to operate in our community. But the RNC was probably the highest-profile public-private partnership win the city had had, and that gave us the confidence to compete for things like Amazon, and including feeling good about getting those 3,000 jobs. We haven't had 3,000 new jobs come to our community in probably a generation, and we can build from that. The good news is that Amazon sees Cleveland by those decisions that they've made out in North Randall and Euclid as a great place to be. So we can compete, and it'll start now because, as you know, what will happen and why we have to be very careful about what we say is that we do think there are some things in our bid that will be special, and that's what other cities feel, and we want to keep those in our bid. And those are the kinds of proprietary things that we have to be mindful of.
In a way, we've gone to some sadness to some swagger
when
it comes
to
word, right?
I think so, and I think, again, I don't want to oversell the RNC, but I do think, you know, you look at the criteria, and we talked about this last month, when you look at the criteria that Amazon put on the table, for companies to compete, you got to be a big metropolitan area with a lot of assets. And the good news is we have those.
Joe Roman, Greater Cleveland Partnership, with me. With that point in mind, I saved this Forbes article from back in September. This is Forbes.com.
You know
Forbes? Okay.
Yeah.
Headline, Cleveland's surprising turnaround and what it means for new business. Yet another great article, somebody comes to this town. Parts of the article include tremendous support for entrepreneurs, talking about jumpstart,
right?
Access to capital, technology, high quality of life, Cleveland potential as the next technology hub. So many great positives.
Yeah, so many great. In fact, you had one on just earlier today about the importance the Medina County Commissioner was talking about
manufacturing. Right.
We never want to lose that base. But and you talked about it also. You know, this city is the kind of city. Cities are different. This is the kind of city where 75 to 80% of our growth in the future is really going to come from companies already here in manufacturing, in healthcare, in IT, in headquarters, those kinds of things. Then the other 20% is the opportunity to attract new companies because of that base and those assets that we have. But overall, it's always going to be 75 to 80% of our growth is going to come from existing firms and startups, the kinds of things that Cozy and Jumpstart and others support.
All right, so later today we'll have some more. We'll have it covered, but today officially Cleveland, just like many other cities, saying, yeah, here's what we're doing as far as Amazon. That's
And I'm curious as to what the I hope that Amazon by the end of the day releases the count. I'm curious as to how many bids actually came in.
Okay, a couple things else. Political races. Obviously, we've got the mayor, Frank Jackson, being challenged by Zach Reed. There's a city club debate between those two today. But, you know, every community, you got school board, you got different things being voted. The important thing is know what you're voting on and get out and do it, right?
Absolutely. You got to get out. Strange things happen when people don't go to vote. And, you know, we don't have in this country, unfortunately, we don't have the greatest voting turnout records. I don't know whether that's complacency or what. but they're low. But when they get even lower, because people don't go out to vote, then some strange things can happen. There are some important issues on the ballot that will affect jobs, such as Tri-C's expansion.
Let me run these by you. Tri-C's one.
Tri-C's one. That's one where we're going to be adding new facilities to support some of these new jobs that are emerging in our town, including IT and healthcare and so forth. Another one is the port. You talked about manufacturing. Well, if you can't ship the things we build here to people who need it, then obviously you don't have a productive manufacturing economy. And the port has been growing its shipping capacity over the last few years in some interesting ways.
And issue two, statewide, that's been debated, talked about a lot, huge amount of money also being spent
on
that.
Our organization has come out against that as we studied it very, very carefully. And from our standpoint, a lot of reasons. But the biggest reasons is the vagaries in that bill are just too alarming. There are too many things that are unclear that will end up in court, and we just don't think that's a good way to legislate and set public policy.
Let me get you out here on NASA. And I want to mention this only because it was at the got a chance to go to the game the other night, and I'm standing there in line with everybody, and you hear conversations. Two guys behind me literally were in town from Boston, okay, ironically, but they were here for some meetings with NASA. They were a supplier,
right?
And they stayed in town for the game. And it was just interesting to overhear what they had to say about NASA Glenn and where they were staying. Always important.
Yeah, and NASA, you know, in other cities where NASA is located, as you know, there's 10 centers around the country, NASA tends to be the big deal in those cities. Well, we have a lot of big deals, which is why NASA doesn't get sometimes as much attention as deserves. However, I just heard that finally a new sign went up on I-71 to tell people where NASA headquarters is, which I think is a big step forward.
That's good. We've already had one on 480, but finally 71,
yes,
too.
Yes.
Yeah, it's amazing how bureaucracy gets in the way of that stuff once in a while. I said that, not you. Joe Roman, Greater Cleveland Partnership. Later today, we'll find out more about the bid for Amazon, right?
Yep.
All right, thanks,
Bart. Good to see you.
Team coverage of the Browns on News Radio, WTAM 1100. Every Thursday, we are joined by former Browns center Dave Woolabaugh. Played 9 seasons in the NFL, now calls Northeast Ohio home, and we are so happy about that. Joins us every week, talk a little Browns football. Bill Wills, Mike Snyder alongside. Morning, Dave.
Morning, guys. How are you?
Good, buddy. Look, we're going back to Kaiser. I want to get to that. But first, let me just ask you about this front office and the noise and the blowing the thing up and all. I mean, your day in playing, there's noise around many teams, especially this franchise with their struggles. As a player, do you keep an eye on the noise, or are you your own business and you're just always staying focused and you just stay away from that stuff? Or is it always in your mind as far as who you're working for?
No, you know, I think that the reality is those the guys who are making the noise, whether it be the front office, you know, claiming responsibility for the success in the draft, or there's someone else pointing fingers at the lack of success for what's been going on. I mean, everyone right now is kind of circling their wagons a little bit and getting territorial, because when things go, I guess, you know, they go wrong so consistently, something's got to change, and no one wants that change to be them. They want it to be the other person for what they didn't do, right? So, but as a player, as a professional, you have to maintain your sanity. You have to maintain your focus, because at the end of the day, it doesn't matter if it's Sauce Brown or Podesta or someone else that they bring in from the outside in the personnel department. You still have to produce on Sundays. You still have to line up against the opponent every week. It's a different guy, so it's really hard. You're aware of it. You know what's going on. You'll talk about it, but I think when it comes time to practice, football players, and I think because of everything that they have to do, they're trained, it's ingrained in them, where you cannot let that be a distraction to you. And I think as much as it is talked about, it doesn't affect them on a Sunday.
And Dave, when you look at it, just the situation they're in, the continuous losing, and then the way these other quarterbacks, Wentz and Watson, have performed, it couldn't be any more of a worst-case scenario, but certainly it's very reasonable to ask, hey, what is going on here, isn't it?
You know, it is, and I think that as a fan, and as fans, we looked at rebuild after rebuild after rebuild, and you know, it's almost like, you know, the system that we're in right now was kind of the lay of this fad diet. We were given a shot, and this one's going to work this time. This is the magic pill, you know, where I think if you look at organizations, and we've talked about this a number of times, and it's common sense, where you look at the teams that historically have been stronger. They historically have produced winning teams or playoff teams, and maybe, you know, even Super Bowl contenders at times, is they have a process. They've implemented the process. There's a discipline to that process. And it doesn't change, you know. I mean, you know, here in Cleveland, we know the Steelers all too well, and we love to hate them. But the reality is over the last, 50 years, very little has changed. Their defensive scheme hasn't changed. The personnel department, the way they select players hasn't changed. And that's one example. You can look at other organizations and look at the Patriots and what they have done there. There's a clear process. There's a path of who's the decision makers are, how they integrate with the football department of the organization, and they complement each other. It's not, different silos kind of, just throwing stuff out there. And I think that that's ultimately a result. I mean, I guess if you look at the analytics and the department, we have a ton of draft picks. And if we're not analyzing and making use of those picks correctly, all we're getting is a bunch of placeholders, which we don't need. We actually need impact players. And if those players they bring in, if they're not guys that Hugh can use, if they're not Hugh Jackson type of guys, they don't complement the systems he wants to do, or Greg Williams for that matter, then at that point we're pushing a rock uphill.
Yeah, it sure looks that way. Well, they're going back to Kizer. You mentioned change. Dave saw a note today that with Kizer coming back in, that means the Browns will have switched quarterbacks 20 times in the past 43 games. Now, for Kizer, do you think maybe the week on the sideline could be helpful for him now as he comes back? What are your thoughts?
Well, he's a young guy. He's a smart guy. And I read that him getting demoted or benched last week was a good motivator for him. And I think the only thing that we can hope for was if he's as smart as we think he is, I would hope that he really took that to heart as a shot across the bow that, okay, this isn't just necessarily going to come easy to you. He got slapped back a little bit. Hopefully he took that week off. He put in some extra time in with the film study to pick up tendencies, to see what he was doing wrong and to do some mechanical corrections in terms of his ball releases so he doesn't sail balls or throw them behind receivers. I think that that's all that we can hope for at this point. He had extra time to put in. Now, how did he use that extra time is going to be the question, and we're not going to know that until Sunday.
Former Browns lineman Dave Woolabaugh, we don't have enough time to go into it, but congrats on the Syracuse win against Clemson. Tell me you lit up a cigar, too, like some of those kids did, huh?
I didn't light up a cigar, but I caught the tail end of it, and it was one of those things. We don't see a lot of Syracuse games here in Ohio, but everybody in my household was glued to the set. We were all in one room, and it was just exciting. And of course, through the course of the night, your phone is just blowing up and everything on social media. So that was a huge, huge win for the program, because there's no secret we haven't been doing particularly well the last several years. Yeah. So that was big.
Not since you in the days of Dave Lapham. I'll drop that name on you. Big Orange, keep going. See you, pal. Thanks.
Thanks, guys.
Be good. John Michael may be a walk-on that. Of course, he's got a big television career ahead of him at some point. Complete Cavaliers coverage on News Radio WTAM 1100. Voice of the Cavs, John Michael, joins us this morning for your morning Cavs update. It's brought to you by Levin Furniture, the preferred home furniture and mattress supplier to your Cleveland Cavaliers. Hi, John.
Good morning, guys.
Let's go back. They got too close in the third quarter. We were walking the ball up some.
Yeah, got a little bit tight. Toronto loved the pace in the first half, but afterwards he said, yeah, this team needs to be in better shape. We're going to play at the pace that he wants. But they get a win. They build a comfortable 18-point lead. They led by 16 at the half. It did get a little dicey at the end. But, hey, LeBron James, who barely practiced in camp because of that sore ankle, falls only an assist short of a triple-double. He was as fantastic as ever. Kevin Love hit a nice late shot. Some nice performances. I thought Derrick Rose was good in the game. I thought J.R. Smith had some really nice moments. And with all the emotion and everything else and the storylines, and let's not forget the gruesome injury to Gordon Hayward, which took the wind out of everybody's sails in the first quarter. I think it was a nice opening night for the Cavaliers. They take up the victory, and off to Milwaukee they go today to take on the Bucks tomorrow night.